This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're a little over a month away from the November general election, and while the presidential race has dominated the news, there's a significant political matchup right here in Wisconsin.
In 2010, there were 57 lawyers, zero manufacturers, and way too many career politicians in the United States Senate. Today, there are 54 lawyers, one manufacturer, that'd be me, still way too many career politicians, and now Senator Feingold wants to add another one, himself. Fixing this broken system will take the perspective of someone who's actually solved problems. 31 years of manufacturing taught me how. I'm Ron Johnson, and I approve this message.
He campaigned as a job creator.
But Senator Johnson helps companies ship jobs overseas. Good manufacturing jobs just disappeared.
CEOs and giant corporations get richer.
Guys with families and guys like me, just gets harder and harder to get ahead.
We need an economy that works for people like me.
For people like me.
For people like me.
People like me.
I'm Russ Feingold, and I approve this message because Wisconsin's middle class and working families should come first.
Sense of the advertising battle in Wisconsin. The race for one of Wisconsin's Senate seats pits current Republican Senator Ron Johnson against Democrat Russ Feingold, who lost the seat to Johnson back in the 2010 Tea Party sweep. And as we get closer to Election Day, both candidates are making their final cases to voters.
Joining us now to talk about the race for the U.S. Senate is Charlie Jacobs. He's an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Rob. Glad to be here.
Well, before we dig into some of the issues and the back and forth, what are we seeing in the polls as we watch this U.S. Senate race?
Well, you know, there really hasn't been a whole lot of consistent polling in the state. We saw one come out from Marquette, which had Johnson trailing by about 6 points, well within the margin of error. When you added in the Libertarian candidate, we saw that slip a little bit more by about five. Emerson actually had a poll come out recently. It's a college out of Massachusetts, and they actually had the lead up by 10. So Feingold was leading by double-digit points. Now, you have to take into consideration that that is a different question, and they didn't pose a question regarding whether or not anyone was interested in a third-party candidate. So we have to be maybe a little bit suspicious of that. But all the polls recently, I mean, I'm talking consistently since the start of the year, have shown a relatively consistent and 5 to 6 point lead for Feingold. So we haven't seen much movement off of those numbers since very, very early in this race.
Looking at this race from outside of Wisconsin's borders, are people still seeing this as a very vulnerable Senate seat for incumbent Republicans?
Yes, I think that I think in many ways that horse is out of the barn. I think that vulnerability isn't a question anymore. It's more about how much Feingold is likely to win by. I mean, most of the predictor polls out there suggest that this is a 90 to 95% chance of a win for a Democrat, and I think that's in part why you're seeing some of the changes in support for Ron Johnson that were announced today.
Right. Some national party groups or national organizations starting to pull money out of the state that they'd been planning to spend on advertising. I mean, people maybe read too much into that sometimes, but do you think there's really a significant statement there?
I think there is a significant statement. You have to recognize that the party and organizations like the National Republican Senatorial Committee, they do their own internal polls, and they're reading these tea leaves to determine how to allocate the finite resources that they have. And you have to realize these races are getting so astronomically expensive. And even with the help of outside organizations that are dumping money into ad buys in the state, they're still responsible for trying to support these candidates. And usually what you see when there's a large ad buy that's pulled out of a particular district or a particular state, it means that the internals aren't very favorable to the candidate. And they'd rather shift the money to other potential winning states. And if you look at what the Republicans have to fight against this election cycle, they're probably thinking that $800,000 they're pulling out can help somebody like Toomey in Pennsylvania, or, you know, win a seat from Democrats in Nevada so that Joe Heck can maybe beat Masso. So, I mean, there's a lot of good that can come for Republicans from that $800,000. And if their perception is that Johnson is in trouble, they might want to use that money elsewhere.
Right, because the Senate as a whole is perceived as being at stake. It could flip from Republican to Democratic hands.
Yeah, depending on which predictor you look at, I mean, some say there's about a 60% chance that Democrats are going to win. Others have it as low as about 15%. It's really in play right now. And so I think there's a lot of jockeying for position and resources. And I mean, to be clear, I don't think that Johnson is being abandoned by the Republicans. I think in their calculation, they'd like to use their resources in a different place, recognizing that there are other resources that Senator Johnson has available to him. There are a lot of third-party buyers out there for advertisements. He's getting lots of support in that particular way. And so their calculation might be, you don't need our money. We're shifting it elsewhere. And so you find the resources you need to try to run that credible campaign all the way through to the November election day.
Before we turn to some of the particular policies of both candidates, let's look at the presidential race. How do you see the Trump-Clinton race affecting the Senate race in Wisconsin?
I think part of it is going to be turnout. Typically in presidential years, we'll see a spike in turnout. And when you have either a tight race or one where there's a perception that it counts in a very meaningful way, I'm not trying to say that other presidential elections did not count, but if there's some real salience to the public, you're going to drive up turnout. That typically will give Democrats a little bit of a boost. In off-year elections, we tend to see sort of a suppression of Democratic vote. They're not as animated and motivated to go to the polls. So if we see high turnout rates because of the presidential election, it's going to affect down-ticket races. Now, this is a confounding year. Sometimes it's really hard to disentangle exactly what's happening because of the effect of Trump's reputation and Clinton's reputation, and it's been a little bit muddy in the data to see whether or not it's giving a boost to Republicans down-ticket or Democrats down-ticket. However, if turnout goes up, Democrats tend to benefit in that kind of scenario.
We're talking to political scientist Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College in Pierre, looking at Wisconsin's U.S. Senate race, Ron Johnson, Russ Feingold. Charlie, voters sometimes might complain, these candidates are all the same. You can't tell them apart. That's not the case here, right? If you're looking strictly at the ideological choice, at the policies supported, there's a very clear contrast here, isn't there?
There is. And Ron Johnson, I think, is... He's not unique, but I think he's among a small class of 2010 winners who have stuck and hewed pretty closely to those that helped bring him to office. So while I don't think he stands and waves the Tea Party flag, his partisan ideology matches pretty clearly. And so we can take somebody else who won in that period, who's now retiring from office, Reid Ribble. I mean, Ribble seemed to have recognized that he had a responsibility beyond one constituency, the Tea Party. And so I think he amended some of his approaches to governance because of that. And Johnson does not seem to reflect that. And Feingold has always been perceived to be somebody who is more liberal than your typical Republican and less likely to moderate on issues. So I think we have a real divergence in the party policies of these two candidates.
Yeah, looking at staying with Ron Johnson for a moment, definitely a lot of traditional Republican platform sort of things, lowering taxes, trying to boost jobs in manufacturing in particular. He's also had things that seem like they'd line up well with Trump supporters. On this show, he's talked a lot about border security, security with the Mexican border in particular, talking about immigration and terrorism when it comes to border security. Is he somebody who can appeal to mainstream Republicans and Donald Trump supporters who may not always agree on Donald Trump himself?
I mean, I think there's enough of a contrast between these candidates that they don't think that there's some symbiosis between these two candidates. I mean, Ron Johnson's rise to a position of prominence in the politics of the state preceded Donald Trump, and he has his own particular reputation. And I know that sometimes you have to ride the coattails of your party's candidate, but I don't see this enmeshing that would sort of be an albatross around his neck as we get closer to Election Day. Because of his manufacturing background, because of his connection to the Chamber of Commerce and those kinds of issues, protections of jobs, while yes, it resonates in the same way that Trump does, I think the tone is different, and I think Republican faithful can recognize that difference.
And then looking at Russ Feingold, progressive liberal type ideas on taxes, economic inequality. What do you see as his main message this time around?
It's interesting. I mean, he has a message, but it seems to be one that's safe, in the sense that he's not challenging sort of the orthodoxy of the Democratic Party, and he is not moving off of the positions that he took when he was a United States senator. It's kind of like Feingold too. I mean, you're going back to the movies for a replay here, which I think is a strategy that could be useful to him. I think his perception, and probably his campaign's, is they just got sort of sucked into the vortex of 2010, and that maybe in a more favorable year, a presidential year, people would recognize the benefits he brought to the state as a Democratic representative. And I think part of that you see in some of the polls where people knew who he was. They had a high favorability. In fact, he has retained a higher favorability than Ron Johnson since January. In fact, even preceding that. So I think that sort of a second run at this, the repeat of the movie, is sort of the strategy he took that was most appropriate here.
And in looking what the candidates are saying about each other, the campaigns, both have tried to draw sort of an ethics charge against each other. The Ron Johnson campaign saying Russ Feingold and his time away from the Senate set up PACs. They're saying, well, they're PACs that mainly just existed to support Russ Feingold for office. Russ Feingold looking at a payment to Ron Johnson from his company after he had run, claiming that, in effect, the corporation had funded his campaign. Do you see those ethics charges sticking, resonating with voters in either direction?
I don't really think that they do. The one concerning Senator Johnson seems to be something that's being relitigated here. I think most of the public was aware of his connection to his business interests, and I'm not sure exactly how the public is going to be driven to the polls or driven against a vote for Johnson based upon that. And the charges against Feingold, a lot of those areas of campaign finance and PACs are so esoteric that most of the public, including a lot of political scientists, kind of get lost in the minutia and the legalese of those. So I'm not sure whether that's going to resonate as a message to the public. Most people are interested in pocketbook issues. They want to hear policy debates about those kinds of themes.
We'll leave it there for now. Charlie, thanks as always for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was Charlie Jacobs. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College. He joined us to talk about the Johnson-Feingold Senate rematch.